Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.
We make thousands of decisions throughout the course of our day, and by the end of it, the last thing we want to do is make even more choices about what to have for dinner. Say goodbye to last-minute grocery store runs, meal planning, and recipe stress when you sign up for Home Chef. Home Chef makes your nightly routine easier and more exciting with a wide selection of delicious meals that arrive at your doorstep in the form of fresh, perfectly pre-proportioned ingredients and an easy-to-follow recipe card. With 20 unique and flavorful chef-curated meal options available each week, Home Chef ensures you and your taste buds will never get bored. Once you create your Home Chef account and set your meal preferences, you simply select your weekly menus and adjust your delivery dates. Skip weeks or pause whenever you need. Home Chef will recommend meals based on your selected preferences with plenty of menu options to fit any dietary needs. Looking to master the art of cooking? Check out their classic meal kit options complete with chef-written step-by-step instructions. Don't have time in your busy schedule to cook? No problem. Have a hot, delicious meal on the table and a snack with quick solutions like their 15-minute recipes, microwave meals, and oven-ready options that save you time and effort in the kitchen. Plus, clean up is a breeze. Goodbye grocery shopping. For a limited time, go to homechef.com/PC1 for $90 off your first month. That's a value of 10 free meals. Again, go to homechef.com/PC1. That's PC and the number one for $90 off.
Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Rhonda Hansom talks about false promises.
I am a woman of a certain age, and I came of age between integration and Black Power. At the time, integration was offered as a solution to America's race problem. Integration would help whites see Black people as individual human beings, instead of outrageous stereotypes. With assimilation, we'd live in the colors of Benetton America as harmonious as a Coca-Cola ad. I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony.
Today on the show, comedian and entertainer Rhonda Hansom talks about being given false promises. Stay close.
My name is Rhonda Hansom, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Hey! Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, last week on the show, I had on New York City ballerina Georgina Paskogin. And first of all, that was interesting in and itself because I rarely have on anybody but comedians. But when you get, like, you know, a soloist in the New York City Ballet, I want to hear stuff. You know, like, I'm interested automatically. So we had a great conversation last week talking about her new book, Swan Dive, The Rogue Ballerina. So go back and listen to Georgina last week, you guys, but not today, because today I'm here with another amazing talent, and she is a comedian, and her name is Rhonda Hansom, and that's Hansom without the D.
No D in handsome.
It's
like
truly
a handsome man without the D.
Yeah.
Make up your own joke, ladies and gentlemen.
That sounds very funny, actually. You should use that. It's like handsome without the D. And by that, I mean you need to be handsome and you need to have a D. But that's not the point. No, but I never have heard that name before.
I am the only Rhonda Handsome in the United States with the last name spelled like that, H-A-N-S-O-M-E. So I am quite unique.
I love it. And that's probably why you got RhondaHandsome.com and at RhondaHandsome on Twitter. And then on Instagram, you are at Rhonda Full.
Like with two L's. With
it's
two
wonderful.
L's. It's wonderful to be here with you.
That is so funny. That's really funny. Now today, Rhonda, you bring forth the topic false promises. And I guess that just makes me think of growing up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I don't really think there were false promises because I have four older sisters and a brother. I think that everything I thought I could be was right in line with what they did, which was all get married, go to the suburbs and have families. Like I didn't get any false promises because I didn't get promised anything, but you're going to go to the school your dad works at. You're going to, you know, get out of college and you're going to get married and go to the suburbs. That's what I thought. So there wasn't really false promises that way. I mean, I'm just trying to put my finger on it. False promises. So I'm anxious to hear your story about that, which we're going to hear in a minute. But first, I want to just talk about you on John Fugelsang's program on Mondays. And that's on Sirius XM, right?
Oh, yes, it is. It is on Sirius XM Progress, and it's weekly, every Monday evening. I join him around 11:15 Eastern time, and I love being on there with John. I have a chance to talk with his callers and to weigh in on the topics of the day. And plus, he is such a great human being, in addition to being a funny comedian. He's done everything in entertainment. And when I make John laugh, I feel like I have gotten a gold star because he is really a special person. And I love being on his show on a regular basis.
Well, I'm so happy for you because
thank you.
It's topical. Do you prepare? Do you look at the papers and
Oh my gosh. Yes, I do. And sometimes it's a little overpowering because, as you know, things are really in a state today around the world, and just trying to remain aware of everything that's going on when you don't actually know what we're going to be discussing, because what I've watched on mainstream news or CNN or MSNBC, what I have watched at 11 o'clock in the morning can have been eclipsed by what's going on at 11 o'clock at night. I try to prepare, but I also try to remain spontaneous because sometimes, the callers come up with things. In fact, this past week, we ended up talking about the difference between collard greens and kale and cooking and ways of cooking both of those. So
that's funny.
I love it because it's always interesting, whatever the topic.
Yeah, no, and I've listened to a few, but let me ask you this. How do you keep your patience with some of the callers?
Oh, that's a challenge. That really is a challenge to keep patience. And I actually have lost it every once in a while. I think twice in like all of these years. It's been about what, 4 or 5 years I've been doing his show in the studio earlier and now over the phone lines. It's a challenge, but most of the time the listeners are reasonable. Even the ones who have a differing opinion, we communicate so beautifully. For me, it's the conversation, and I'm very happy that I've only really gotten ticked off once or twice. And one person that I gave it what for actually apologized to me because he realized the error of his ways. He sought out my email address and wrote me a heartfelt apology. It was mature. I appreciated that, yes.
I had somebody apologize to me about 3 weeks ago. It was like the day. Well, what it was I was in Nashville and she wasn't wearing a mask. And somebody said something like, well, you can wear one if you want or whatever. And I looked at her and I said, don't you realize so many people have died? And she goes, well, nobody I know. And I just was like, okay. And I'm moving on, right? And then the next day, she came up to me and she said, I want to apologize for saying that to you because I know you were being genuine and I was being a smartass. And I was like, wow. That's amazing. Now go put your fucking mask on.
But I'm glad that she recognized the error of her way, because there has been a bit of a trend in our society lately where people are bullies and they refuse to acknowledge that they have been wrong and refuse to apologize for obvious missteps. So you were fortunate to have someone who could recognize that. That she had misspoken.
Yeah, I agree. Now, let me ask you. You and John are basically politically aligned.
On some things, on many things, but we frequently disagree. And
on like what? Give me an example.
Oh, my goodness. I think, actually, since I've been on his program, I have actually come into alignment with him on leaving the Democratic Party. I have been a Democrat my entire life, and I was surprised to see that I was actually aligned with him now that I am an independent. There are some things on the details of reparations for descendants of the American enslaved that we may disagree on. And I also take it upon myself to have a stronger feeling of judgment on people who are callous and caustic and uncaring for the humanity of people. John has a very Christian like in the idea, not on a religious idea, but in following the precepts of turning the other cheek and believing in people and giving people the benefit of the doubt. And me, being a lapsed Catholic, I take it upon myself to say, I'll stand in judgment on that person, even if you won't, John. So we have some disagreements.
Yeah, I actually like that. And I wrote down here in my notes that you did grow up Catholic, as I grew up Catholic. And, you know, God, I just don't know how anybody remains Catholic. I don't understand how they remain Catholic with all of the discretions and all of the cover-ups. It's not only all the laws they broke. It's not only all the sexual, you know, the terrible, terrible, you know, lives that they've ruined and these sexual exploitations, but it's the cover up and the way they just kept moving these priests.
Really, I didn't. And when I was going to school, I didn't even realize that Catholics were such perverts. I just thought they were racist because they were so racist. Yeah. They didn't even bother to molest me. It really, it really was a surprise to find out.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, I also wanted to touch upon, you know, you've had this huge career, right? I mean, you've been doing stand-up for, would you say 30 years?
Almost, yeah. Just about.
And you did something that, you know, used to be very popular. You were an opening act for many performers, you know, huge music acts like James Brown and Aretha Franklin and Anita Baker and even Diana Ross. And I'm just wondering, like, what was that? What was that show strategy? Like, I know they used to do that. Like, I interviewed Tom Dreesen. He used to open up for Frank Sinatra. But that, so the idea was that they bring a comic out. And then just tell me what that was.
I love that idea. And when the arenas and stadiums are open in a healthy way, I would love to go back to opening for these wonderful music acts, because they would have a comedian come on and do 15 to 20 minutes be in front of the curtain or before the band came out. And I loved it. I actually loved it because because I remember being at Radio City Music Hall with Anita Baker, and there are thousands of people just in the balcony, and to feel the waves of laughter coming down at you and coming at you from in these huge groups. Now, don't get me wrong, I love the intimacy of a comedy club, whether it's packed or whether it's the last table of two people or three couples. But when you're in a stadium or an amphitheater, the power and the electricity of people who are all there because they love the main act, it's exciting to tap into that energy. And I just had such a fabulous time working outdoor venues, amphitheaters, and also huge venues like the Radio City Music Hall of each state across the nation. And it's such great money. I love it. And you get to feel very close with the band, with the backup singers. You may not actually be that connected with the main act. I think with Miss Ross, I wasn't supposed to look at her, but James Brown, I was not supposed to walk by his dressing room when I was on my way to the stage, and I'm going, I don't have time to say hello to you now. I got to go out and do my 15-20 minutes. But it really, it's very exciting, and you're collaborating. And the great part is the weight of the show is not on you. You know, it really is the main act's show, but you get to be like the pickle on the side of the sandwich and a little garnish that prepares people for the main act and gets them ready, you know, for what they're really there for. And also it gives people a chance to get in and adjust it in their seats. So it's all right that people are coming in and sitting down while you're talking, because they're really there to see Anita Baker or at the time Aretha Franklin or Smokey Robinson, the main act. But yet you still have a lot of the attention and the laughter.
I think it's just fabulous. Now, two or three things here. How do you know when you're, you know, like you say a line, a funny line, and how do you know when to talk again, because the people in the back aren't even hearing you? Like there's a whole delay in them hearing you, and then another delay in their laughter coming back to you.
That is such a fascinating question on different levels, you learn, but also there is a difference in weighing the laughter. Like we frequently, comedians talk, we would talk among ourselves how the laughter in the Catskills, where I spent a lot of my time at places like the Villa Roma and the Granite and the Concord and even some of the bungalow colonies, the laughter in the Catskills is different from the laughter in a casino. And when you're in a huge venue, you have to time it. You have to get a sense of the timing. So much of comedy is actually timing and rhythm, that you have to adjust your cadence and your pacing so that you don't step on your laughs, but you do keep the energy of the show moving forward. It's an exercise. It's a fascinating exercise, and I'm happy to do that exercise as soon as someone wants to book me. I love it. I love it.
There's a comedian here in LA, Bobby Oliver, and she has a saying, and she even has it tattooed on her wrist. It says, embrace the pause.
Yes, yes. I am Facebook friends with Bobby Oliver, and I hope to work with her whenever I do travel back to the coast. Yes, you embrace the pause, because that's one of the things that you come to learn. I came to learn as a comedian to not be afraid of the silence, because sometimes interesting things can happen in the silence. Audiences grab things, and you know, sometimes you'll get a delayed reaction, and it's very exciting. And sometimes in the pauses, you can do a physical activity or an act out that actually enhances the punchline.
Yeah, you get another laugh. Okay, and the other question I have for you is, when your time is up and now they're clapping and the lights are going down and they're going to open that curtain and the main act is going to come out, where do you go? Obviously you can go out, go to your dressing room, you can do anything you want, but it's got to be a gas to stand there and watch this.
It is. And what I would frequently do is stand in the wings and watch, because when you're watching someone like the Pointer Sisters, who I opened for so many times, you grow up listening to their music and then you're actually there with them, or someone like Aretha Franklin or the fabulous Diana Ross, you watch. And so most of the time I might go back to my dressing room to just freshen myself or get something to drink or take off my high heel shoes. But then I would stand in the wings and watch and learn from people who are masters of their craft.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's so much to learn. There's so much to... You know, just the whole vibe. It's so nuanced. The whole entertainment industry is nuanced, but live entertainment specifically, you know, because anything could happen. How about the other night? I was hosting this gig. Everybody got 5 minutes, and it was at Flappers, the comedy club. And I run out. Okay, so I bring up the next guy, and then I run out, and I'm in the hallway chatting with somebody. And then all of a sudden, somebody comes and gets me, like, Christine, the guy left. So the guy, after a minute and a half, for whatever reason, he froze and he walked off the stage. And then I wasn't there, and another comic jumped on and, you know, made a joke.
Way to
and continued.
Well, I would have done that. I would have been that comic. When I realized nothing was happening, I would fill the void. I would do
And so
that.
She jumps up, and then she goes, I don't know where your drunk host went. And I'm like, oh, God damn it. And I'm running in. I'm like, I'm here. And anyway, I'm just saying, you never know what's going to happen. So,
and that's why it's exciting. That's why the COVID lockdown has been very challenging for a lot of us, missing the that spontaneous quality of live performance, where you never actually know what's going to happen. You know what you'd like, you know what's usually goes on, but absolutely anything can happen.
Well, listen, I'm excited to hear your story about false promises. But before we get over to the story, I did want to remind everybody that we are back at the Hollywood Improv. Playing Story Smash, the storytelling game show. And I'm also going to be airing them here as a bonus episode on Storyworthy. So we haven't been to the Improv in over 3 years now, and we're finally back. The first show was just this past Saturday night, and it went fantastic. And you guys are going to hear that episode, like I said, coming up as a bonus here on Storyworthy. So you can check out storyworthypodcast.com to find out what's going on, and also, of course, storysmashshow.com. All right, you guys, she's here right now. You've heard her talking, Rhonda Handsome. She is a comedian, and she has appeared on a lot of different television shows like Saturday Night Live and Stand Up Spotlight, the Arsenio Hall Show, Evening at the Improv. And you were even on the Joan Rivers Show as her movie reviewer. Were you really reviewing movies, or was it a joke?
Well, I was really reviewing movies, and hopefully it was a funny review.
That must have been a lot of fun. That must have been a lot of fun.
I adore her. She was really, the fact that she gave me that opportunity was just golden, and I would always revere her just for that, even beyond her being an idol in comedy and upon pioneer for women in the field.
I have had on my show a guy named Tony Tripoli, and he worked with her as her executive producer and friend and confidant. And, you know, he was just in her life for a long time. And he came on once and told me, like, oh, I don't know, like 10 nice things that she did for other people, like just off the cuff. Like somebody goes up and says, Miss Rivers, I love your necklace. It's gorgeous. She says, here, take it. Like, she was so generous.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. What an amazing
and
lady.
A very funny woman.
Oh, my gosh. So funny. And then you have also taken your comedy and your shows over to, you know, overseas, and you've done a lot in London, and you performed for the troops in Korea, and then you also, was it a one-woman show, Divorced and, oh no, it was just a tour, My Divorced and Bitter Tour.
Yes, I went to Israel with that, and that was amazing, playing for that audience. I just loved it. And Ilana and Nir Brand, who are big names in culture in Israel, and were my hosts, and they were fantastic, and taking me around to the venues where I could sling my jokes. It was just wow. Unbelievable. Absolutely
so
unbelievable.
So are those people fans of yours, and they said, we need you over here, or what? How'd that come down?
They are fans and friends, and said, we need to hear your comedy. And they said, let's do this. And I brought the Divorced and Bitter Tour to Tel Aviv.
it's such a win-win. Don't you love that?
Yes.
You know, when they want you, and I want to be there.
Yeah.
I feel like that about Australia. I've been there on my own, not doing comedy, but, you know, vacationing. It was before I had a comedy career. But I feel like, why am I not in Sydney? Why don't I just go down there? They'll love me.
Yes.
And they would. But there's a lot of things that have to happen before we just jump on a plane for 16 hours to Sydney.
This is true. But hopefully for both of us, we'll be able to jump on a plane and travel to another continent with our health not being endangered, and giving people the laughs they deserve and we want to give them.
You better believe it, man, because that is an international treasure, is to laugh. I mean, that's what we all want. I always think that, like, you know, oh God, I see these horrific photos coming out of the Kabul airport, and, you know, you see these people, they've got nothing, and they're leaving, they're fleeing, and you just think, like, oh my God, that could be, why isn't that me? I mean, they have to go to the bathroom, and then they're hungry, and they have children, they're just like me. There's no difference. How did I get lucky? And they are fleeing from the fucking Taliban. It's just...
Well, every day I have to say that I am grateful for all the good that I have, Christine. And I try to acknowledge that, because everywhere in the world there is some kind of devastation, some kind of tragedy. Sometimes it's just physical, you know, like in Haiti. I mean, they had an earthquake, and lo and behold, there's a rainstorm, a tropical rainstorm. So the fact that I actually have running water, I am grateful.
I know,
for.
So am I. And I can, if I start thinking about Haiti too much, I'll just cry, because they just cannot catch a break. And I have,
well, that was orchestrated, you know. The entire world said, yeah, you may have had a successful revolution to be independent, but we're going to make you pay for it the rest of your lives.
So horrible. Oh, my gosh. Okay, we're going back to we're going back to your story. You guys can find Rhonda Handsome over at her website, like I said, rhondahandsome.com without the D, and also on Twitter at Rhonda Handsome. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for the very talented Rhonda Handsome.
Thank you. I am a woman of a certain age, and I came of age between integration and Black power. At the time, integration was offered as the solution to America's race problem. Integration would help whites see Black people as individual human beings instead of outrageous stereotypes. With assimilation, we'd live in the colors of Benetton America as harmonious as a Coca-Cola ad. I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. Well, in my ignorance, I balked at the militant approach of the Black Panthers. So how was I to reasonably convince white people that a melting pot of equality is America's promise and future? I decided to work tirelessly for brotherhood. Multicolored hands grasped in a solemn sway to, we shall overcome, was my goal. that was my gold. And I spent hour after hour in serious rap sessions at the Encampment for Citizenship and the National Conference of Christians and Jews, where I was the director of their Brooklyn Youth Club, fighting for integration. Integration was so embedded in my belief system that I married outside my race. We starry-eyed newlyweds would personally forge the multi-culti melting pot. Our legacy would be the solidarity of a diverse yet peaceful America. Our hearts beat passionately to that tune. So we marched and believed. What this teenager didn't know could fill a universe. But with time, I have learned a few things. Idealistic young love is romantic, but the way your heart beats at 15 is to a very different drum at 50. It had been a successful marriage producing a beautiful, smart son, but in the end, there was no blame around race, just our personalities. It was an oddly amicable divorce until his new white wife insisted I be iced out of extended family events, even those that included our now adult son. Her motive to deny me interaction with in-laws who'd known me for 30 plus years was suspicious and likely race-related. My financial situation as a divorcee was a terrifying change in status to older black woman fading out of the job market in the eternally risky entertainment field. Luckily, I found an affordable apartment in a neglected Bed-Stuy brownstone not far from where I'd grown up. Every day, being single for the first time in my life was an adjustment. 10 years later, just when I thought I had a handle on things, I was gentrified out of the borough of my birth. My financials were a patchwork quilt of hope, ignorance, and an 800-plus credit score. Somehow, I couldn't afford an apartment, but my resources should cover a modest Bronx co-op. When the Seventh Bank refused me an $80,000 mortgage with a reliable co-signer, I knew the rejection was racism. Reading about redlining, bias in real estate, and bigotry in banking is very different from experiencing it. Bias is the reason I do not live in any of the neighborhoods of my choice. I now know racism influences how I'm treated by police, doctors, teachers, bankers, you name it. Even at my age, I'm followed by security in every store. Racism is the foundation of America, a country now in full turmoil. Today, a group swaying with hands grasped and singing, "We shall overcome," is actually against COVID protocols. The rise in nationalist terrorism means I may never teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. As Corona and white supremacy battle to be the boss of America, my values have changed profoundly. My goal now is simply to stay alive. Wear a mask. Wash your hands. Don't be a racist.
I like it. It should be that simple, right? Shouldn't that just be it that simple?
It should be, and we all can hope for it, Christine. I was trying to work for it, but I feel there are so many pressures against us cooperating with each other that it is a never-ending task.
Where's your son at?
Oh, my son is actually working with Outreach to the Homeless. I'm so proud of him. He lives in the apartment he grew up in Tribeca, when we were an intact family. And he's on the front lines every single day. And I am actually happy that he is surviving in his work of choice. He He was a psychology major at Dartmouth, and he's doing good work, and I'm proud.
That's so nice. I'm proud. Yeah, that's exciting. So he, you know, has, I'm just trying to think about your mother-son relationship. You've been able to pass down to him all of these passions that you have, the truth that you have. You know, you have the truth because you lived it. And so how is he, I mean, do you feel like, okay, so I might not see the justice in my lifetime, but maybe he will? Or how is that relationship in terms of what you've been able to teach him? I mean, can you say to him, honey, you got to carry on? Or do you say, like, it fucking doesn't work. Nothing works.
Well, I don't know if it was so much my teaching him explicitly. He saw my protest sign by the door when I would go out to events, to march, especially against the horrific violation of Abner Louima that happened in a Brooklyn police station.
Can you tell me about that real quick? Because I'm not familiar.
Yes, a man was assaulted with a plunger in, I believe it was the 77th precinct in Brooklyn, and it was a horrific violent sexual assault. And the police, when they have done something, they have a certain amount of time to pull their story together. I mean, they're not immediately asked to take a drug test. They're not immediately investigated. The PBA and their associations come around them and start supporting them with lawyers and concocting stories.
Getting the story straight. And the union, probably.
Yes.
The police union.
Yes. Yes. But my son, as I said, he's very smart. And we have these kinds of discussions all the time. And there are some things we may not agree on. But I love that he is aware and is not afraid.
Yeah.
And not afraid to voice his opinion.
So what happened in that precinct then? The cops denied it? What happened?
Well, they always deny. I mean, everyone denies. I mean, even Chauvin, you know, denied that he was involved with the death of George Floyd. But the thing is, I was protesting the 24-hour rule, and I continue to protest qualified immunity, which keeps police from being investigated for so many of the horrific things that they do. You know, everyone a lot of people were pleased that Chauvin was actually convicted, but that's a rarity. That's actually a rarity. And
it's only because it was caught on camera. All those things.
Everybody was home and saw it. Yes, yeah. Yes. But they still, the defense was, you know, they the defense had George Floyd sucking on a tailpipe causing, you know, his death. And if you accept the narrative, a lot of injustice goes without any correction.
Yeah. Ay, ay, ay. Rhonda.
Which is why we are vocal, which is why we march, which is why we protest, and which is why we try to make sure that people understand from our perspective what's going on. You know, that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize, that if you are not experiencing those things, like being followed in every single store you go into, you can't even imagine that security is breathing down your neck no matter where you go. Whether you've just spent, I remember for a while here in New York City, Macy's was actually had security chasing people who had spent money in their stores, and you can't even understand what some of this bias is about. If you have not had these things happen to you, you would say, the police are my friends. The police are there to protect me. These things are in place to keep society in order. But if you are the victim of these things, if you feel this with every single thing that you do, when you go to the bank to ask for a loan, I mean, it's absolutely true. Like in my story, I didn't know anybody else who had an 800 plus credit score, and I couldn't.
I swear to God, that's right here in my notes. I wrote high credit score. Your credit score was off the charts. Over 800 is exceptional.
And I didn't owe anybody anything.
And you only wanted $80,000. You went to
and that's it. It wasn't even like I was asking for a whole lot of money for a loan. It was only $80,000, and
different
I was still rejected by all of those banks. Yeah, yeah. If you don't have these things happening to you, it's very hard to even imagine that this goes on. But it's a reality for a lot of people.
Did you have to teach your son, you know, about if a cop pulls you over, you know, what did you say to him? You know, like, if a cop pulls you over,
I absolutely gave my son the talk. It's the talk that most responsible parents, most responsible Black African-American parents have to give their children for their own safety. You never know how soon it's going to be when your child is going to be called a racial slur. You never know how soon it's going to be when the police will see your child as an adult, as a threatening adult. You know, even Tamir Rice is only 12 years old, playing by himself in a playground and with a toy gun. And there was no warning. The police showed up and this boy was shot. And characteristically, young Black children are seen as adults. I mean, I went to Williamsburg was it Williamsburg or Monticello? One of those places where they're talking about where the slaves were working, and they called like a 9-year-old boy a man working in the fields. You know, they just consider him a male. The Black children are seen as adults and not given the leeway that that white children are. They're not seen as innocent. They are always seen as guilty and are subject to harassment. And yes, I told my son, you cannot do what you see other people do and expect to be treated the same way. You have to understand that there are going to be times when you will be treated differently.
It's just so crushing. It's just...
Well, it's crushing, but it's a reality. Yeah. And because we give the children this talk, we hope that they survive and are able to move forward and advance in spite of all of these
things. And so your topic that you brought, false promises, is like you were told in the early 70s, this is all going to change.
Well, that integration was the false promise that, you know, that it was melding us into that melting pot, getting us into that melting pot was going to change things, but it wasn't. Integration was so false in that it actually took the circulation of resources and money out of Black neighborhoods and dispersed them to every other cultural or racial group and left us really decimated, left us devastated, left us not circulating, recirculating our money even twice in our own
community.
Circles, giving it to corporations or name brands or people who came into our neighborhoods and set up stores where we could not even own stores and getting our resources.
Yeah. You've lived such a life. It's just so interesting, despite all of this. I mean, everything you just said, it's so heavy. I know it's reality. It's just, nonetheless, it's heavy. And then you are able to sort of take all of this energy and harness it into telling stories and making other people laugh.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. And you know what's so funny? Because we were talking about my being in these arenas and the stadiums like Radio City. Actually, the last couple of sets that I've done were on the street of Hunts Point Avenue here in the Bronx. And I had such a great time actually talking about the neighborhood where I live and the fact that I'm political. And I was talking about Lindell, the pillow guy, and how people have been boycotting certain people because of their association with Trump and how I thought to boycott the Goya guy, but I had to rethink that because he owns my building.
Do you remember that ridiculous, that horrible lady, Ivanka Trump, holding up that Goya thing? I just thought...
Yes, I remember
it. I want to smack her. I just want to smack her across the face. I want to smack her back to freaking... She's probably my least favorite Trump. I don't know why.
Ivanka was the one, seeing her, you know, seeing that meme of her holding that Goya can actually inspired the line, which I love, and which, as you say, gets a laugh. It gets a laugh, and I like that.
Yeah, you're amazing. I want to make you laugh, Rhonda. Like, I feel like you've got such a great grasp on this whole sense, this whole humanity that we live in our country, and you've traveled outside the country, so you've seen things, you know things, but you're able to really take it all and then put out such good energy.
Well, the negativity is not going to help anyone, and that's something that I have to hold on to, in addition to my gratitude for just being alive, the understanding that the negativity is not going to produce anything but the same kind of energy. And that's where the laughter comes in. That's where the humor comes in. And I actually love doing the Politipod podcast, which I'm part of, and which Paul Lander actually contributes to frequently. To be associated with a group of people who are humorous, but very aware of what's going on, and being able to put out content on a regular basis that still produces laughs while we're pointing out the foibles and missteps in our society. It's kind of rewarding. It's very satisfying for me.
Rhonda Handsome, you are a gift. You are a gift. I want to give a shout out to Paul Lander because he has connected me. He did connect me with you, and he's connected me with some other fabulous people. So shout out, Paul. Thank you so much. But Rhonda, yeah, you have a great outlook. You have a great energy, and you deserve to be with these people like John Fugelsang and with the people on the Politipod. You deserve to be with Anita Baker and when James Brown was with us and Diana Ross. Oh, my God. I mean, you deserve it all. You are a quality person. You are at the top of my list. I swear to God, I love you, Rhonda Handsome.
I love you, too. And when I'm on the coast, I want to spend some time with you and do a show with you, too.
I'll get you on a show for sure.
When travel is safe.
You bet.
Oh, absolutely.
You bet.
And this has just been so enjoyable, and being able to know that my promises that were not kept was story worthy. Oh.
You're damn straight, sister. You're damn straight. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. But again, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. Please check out storyworthypodcast.com for information on the latest shows coming up live here in Los Angeles. And also check out RhondaHandsome.com. Again, it's Rhonda Handsome without the D. And then follow Rhonda over there on Twitter as well. Let her know that you liked her story. And then follow me as well at Storyworthy. And you are also Rhonda Handsome at Twitter. And then again on Instagram, you're at Rhondaful with an extra L. That cracks me up. You are a gem. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Rhonda. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story worthy week.
I loved it. I really loved it. Thank you so much, Christine.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.